Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 250 of Bat Flips and Maple Dips. It's 5 years, a five-year anniversary.
Wow.
Technically, we already passed the 5 years, but I wanted to do it all in one episode. This is episode 250. Yeehaw. I'm excited. We're back. The draft happened. The All-Star game happened. We're going to preview the game against the Diamondbacks. Justin, 5 years, it doesn't feel like 5 years, but it also feels like 5 years. I don't know how to explain it.
I understand that completely. Yeah, it's like when you think about it, it's like, man, that doesn't seem like that long ago when we started recording with Clayton in the radio station studio.
Yeah.
But then you're like, yeah, shit, like a lot's happened with them. We've literally lived through a pandemic since we started doing this. The Blue Jays went from dumpster fire franchise to legit playoff contender. So we've seen some shit these past 5 years.
Yeah, let's also be fair too. The team has completely renovated its infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well as the way that it does its scouting and coaching, and even I feel like this like culture in the locker room has definitely also changed dramatically since 2018. So it's crazy, man.
That's fair. Yeah.
It's crazy. I'm so excited, though, because taking the time, I know, like, we've been pretty sporadic the last month or month and a half of recording, but,
summertime,
like...
Summertime, baby.
I know, like, I want to go enjoy life and touch grass, and we have been, now we're getting ready for the last 71, is it 71?
I think that sounds right.
71 games or 70 games of the season. They pulled out a win and a squeaker against the Tigers, so they're 50-41. That's good for a wild card spot right now. They hold the tiebreak over Houston, and they could potentially turn it around and get the tiebreaker off the Yankees. So, like, there's a lot of meaningful baseball. It's almost like a brand new season in a way, where the meaning of the games is amplified, but also the meaning of our podcast is amplified because it's been 5 years of some of the funniest fun memories and just like crazy shit that we have seen happen in baseball.
Yeah.
Remember, like, oh my God, trade, like Josh Donaldson getting traded, Russell Martin. Did we trade him or did we just not re-sign him?
He was slinging that plastic shopping bag and,
oh boy.
Just he faded off and rode off into the sunset, you know?
All those guys were gone. In came the new breed of Bo Bichette, Kevin Biggio, Danny Jansen, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Lourdes Gurriel Jr. I've got to include him in that. And then, like, the rise of Teoscar Hernandez, signing Hyunjin Ryu. That was really, like, the
turning point. George Springer,
the gas man.
Yep.
Trading for Jose Barrios and then signing him to the extension.
Yeah.
Oh my god. So much has happened. But here we are.
Yeah. The only constant through it all, Tim Mayza.
Oh my god, that's true.
Yeah.
This podcast has not lived in a world where Tim Mayza was not a part of this team.
That's true.
That's bizarre. And there's no sign of him going anywhere anytime soon either.
Tim's the GOAT.
Because he's extremely effective and he's not going to be that expensive to sign. So the minute his arbitration is up, he'll still be here.
Yeah.
He's a lefty specialist. He's so good. Man, I hope they signed Danny Jansen too. I know we still have it 2 years.
One more year of control.
There's this year and next year. He's a free agent in 2025.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
But then there's like an 100% chance. Like, we're going to sign him.
I hope you're right. Training. Yeah.
Anyway. I love this team.
even though they give me the
shit sometimes.
We sent each other some like 5 year podiversary gifts as well. I don't know if you want to talk about those.
Yeah.
With yours, I went super like podcast kind of like meme.
It's so deep reference in the lore.
Yeah.
It's very deep in the lore. So many of you know that I have a great affinity for a particular Canadian baseball relief pitcher by the name of Paul Quantrill.
Yep.
You'll remember him from his tenure with the Toronto Blue Jays from 1996 to 2001. So he was here for some lean years, but he had a great career, including an all-star appearance. I don't know if you guys remember, but there was one year where he was elite, and he also, he was like 8-0 or something like that.
Pitched in 80 games that year.
Yes, he did. He was so fucking good. He was just like, he was just the man. Do you know what his WRC plus was for that year?
I mean, he's a pitcher, so he wouldn't have WRC plus.
Or what was his, like, I'm looking at his whip was electric.
So
it was a career high.
The year he was an all-star, his baseball reference war, which is more kind to pitchers, is 2.4 as a relief pitcher, which is very good.
Yeah.
His career high was in 97, when it was a 3.2. But
he led the league in games played 4 years in a row.
In a row,
2001, 2002, 2003, 2004. Although he went to the Dodgers and then eventually was with the Yankees. And he was actually really, really good with Toronto that last year and then with L.A. And then he struggled a little bit in 2004.
Father Time caught up with him, I think.
Yeah, and then he bounced around to three different teams in 2005 before retiring. But he is a member of the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
Sure is.
He is also the father of Cal Quantrill, who currently pitches for the
Guardians,
the Cleveland Guardians. What other things could we say about Paul Quantrill? Just a great reliever, kind of like, I don't know how to explain it, but like, he could log you innings, but he was just a strong presence on the mound for a long time in Toronto.
He threw one complete game shutout in his career in his second season, 1993 with Boston, when he was still a starting pitcher. So he was a starting pitcher really up until 1996, when that was kind of his last year starting, and the Blue Jays converted him to a full-time relief pitcher after that, and it paid off for him.
He was not good that year. He really struggled.
Yeah.
But once he switched over to the pen, I mean, from 97 to 2001, he was very good in Toronto. I don't know why they let him go. I don't understand it. But anyway, some things aren't meant to be understood. Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer probably won't get a sniff of the regular Hall of Fame just because not enough time.
No.
But he was there during the years where they had the Canadian Maple Leaf.
Yep.
Not superimposed, but the Jays logo was superimposed over the Canadian Maple Leaf. I like that logo. That was a good time. But I love Paul Quantrill.
Yeah, you love Paul Quantrill. It's just one of those players that you like. I don't know.
He's the first autograph that I have, because I collect mostly hockey stuff, but he will be the first in what I will do. I'll do like a 90s collection where I'm going to get like Joe Carter. I'll get Carlos. Nice. I'll get, who else should I get? I'll get
Roger Al
Leiter. I'll get Pat Hankton. I'm not going to get Rocket Roger. I'm not going to get Boomer.
What about Ricky? He was a Blue Jay in the 90s for a brief time.
Oh, yeah. Ricky. Yeah, that's right. Cause he won the World Series with us.
He sure did. What about Roy Halladay? He came up in the 90s briefly.
Doc might be a shade out of that time.
Sean Green, perhaps.
Sean Green. Man, Sean Green is so good.
He was good. Jose Cruz Jr., was he in the 90s too? Or is he kind of early 2000s?
Jose Cruz Jr. was
Shannon Stewart. That was
97 to 2002.
Yeah. What about?
So he would fit. He would fit it.
What about Shannon Stewart? I remember him from my childhood.
Stu.
Yeah.
Shannon Stewart was 95 to 2003. So he's definitely qualifies for sure.
There's some. Dwayne Ward would be in there. Pete Walker.
Right. Dwayne Ward. Dwayne Ward was 86 to 95. So he's a little.
I mean, 5 years in each decade.
Yeah, Tom Henke was also on the Jays from 85 to 92.
What about Pat Hankin?
Yeah, Pat's going to be in there.
Every great Blue Jay ever.
This is like 90s Central. Pat Hankin was 91 to 99, so he's like perfect.
You got to get a Cito Gaston autographed something too, because
Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer Pat Hankin, by the way.
Yeah, and two-time World Series champion Cito Gaston, the Blue Jays manager.
Remember when they kept Cito Gaston came back like 27 times. It felt like it.
He deserved it.
He was 89 to 97, and then 2008 to 2010.
Yep. And you can give him large credit for resurrecting Jose Bautista. So,
you know what? Cito was also the first African American manager in MLB history to win a World Series title.
Yeah.
That is mentioned, if I'm not mistaken, in one of the episodes of Ken Burns' Baseball. I don't remember which one. But he's also a member of the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. I might prioritize Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
See.
Jays, and then work my way backwards.
Yeah, yeah. And then you got me two baseballs. One of them is a current Blue Jay. We will talk about this episode.
Yes.
And one of them is my favorite Blue Jay ever, Carlos
Everybody's
Delgado.
Everybody's favorite Blue Jay.
Yeah, rightful Hall of Famer Carlos Delgado. We won't get into that argument today because we could do a whole
lot. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The Veterans Committee exists for this.
Yeah, they
got to
get him in. But yeah, Carlos Delgado, you got me. And you also got me Vladdy, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Home run derby champ, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
We've talked about Carlos so many times on this podcast. It was very appropriate.
I always remember his birthday, June 25th, because it's like exactly 2 months after mine. So it was always like, Carlos has the perfect birthday, you know? It's 6 months after Christmas, 6 months before Christmas, right on the dot.
That's true. I never even thought of that.
It's the perfect birthday.
Do you think Carlos Delgado, after all these years, do you think like the Hall of Fame snub bothers him?
No, I think for a lot of guys that are arguably snubs of the Hall of Fame, they know how good they are, you know? Like,
yeah.
The accolade is nice, but when you have a career and the consistency that a guy like Carlos Delgado had, I think he sleeps fine at night.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy who had 30 home runs for, like, what was it? Like, it was, like, 11 seasons in a row or something.
Like
crazy.
A decade. Yeah, it was insane. Yeah. You know what else is pretty elite, too? He holds the team record for most home runs.
Yep.
By a single player. And it's by, like, almost 80 home runs.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, he's incredible. He was 336 home runs as a Blue Jay. Which is more than Jose Bautista, more than Edwin Encarnacion, more than Vernon Wells, more than Joe Carter, more than George Bell.
Yep. There are Blue Jays greats, and then there's Carlos Delgado. The guy was electric, and he was a guy who didn't strike out a ton more than, like, there was a couple of years where he actually walked just as much as he struck out, basically. And, I mean, 2000, which was, like, maybe his best year ever, he finished fourth in MVP voting. He actually walked more times than he struck out while hitting 39 home runs and having an OPS of just below 950. You can argue his best year was probably...
What's his career OPS?
Career OPS... Sorry, I'm looking... As actually, his best year was, 2000.
I'm looking it up right now. His career OPS 929. Is 920. There, like, I don't know how you could argue that he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, his career WAR is 40.44. I think that's kind of where
that's fucking bananas.
People make the argument against is that, oh yeah, it just wasn't enough time. But I mean, his Black Ink, Gray Ink, Hall of Fame monitor. I mean, he's close, if not better than most.
He's better for batting.
Yeah, people argue that his peak years weren't, they're below an average Hall of Fame first baseman. But I think he's one of those guys that while you don't induct him based on comparisons to other Hall of Famers, you induct him based on the type of career that he had. And to the fact that he was 36 years old and still hitting 38 home runs and having more than 100 RBIs while, you know, hitting 271 with an OPS of 871 at age 36 is pretty incredible.
I think his legacy suffers because he was a contemporary of, like, Frank Thomas, for example. 100%. But then also he played at the same time as other...
And never linked to steroids,
first baseman,
you know?
Like, Jim Thomey.
So.
Yeah, like, these guys, they were all bangers. And Carlos was definitely somebody who... while he played less than Tome and Frank Thomas, there's another Blue Jay legend, Frank Thomas.
Yeah, hit his.
My favorite first baseman of all time.
Was it his 600th home run he hit with the Blue Jays or his 500th? I can't remember.
His 500th. He hit 521 career home runs.
That's right. Yep. Frank Thomas is great. Let's chat about the draft a bit here, Patrick. The Blue Jays made a pick 20th overall. They drafted the first player in the first round ever of Indian descent. Not the first Indian player ever drafted, but Arjun Namala, shortstop, Strawberry Crescent High School. This kid is 6'1", 170 pounds, only 17 years old, so he's young. He hasn't even turned 18 yet, but he just finished high school in Florida State and in Florida, and he was actually Florida State U, and that's where he'll go if he doesn't sign at the Blue Jays. They have until the 25th to get a deal done with him. He was ranked a lot higher on a lot of draft boards, but there were some rumors swirling about how he potentially wanted to sign for more money than teams above the Blue Jays were willing to give him. So we're not really too sure yet if they agreed to a signing bonus beforehand, or if the Blue Jays are just kind of saying, like, you know what, we drafted you, say no if you want, but here's what we think you're worth. So we'll see how that plays out over the next 2 weeks.
I'm excited because even though it's a shortstop pick, and we've kind of beaten this topic up quite a bit in that you can never have too much shortstop depth, I was surprised because I thought they were going to go outfielder. Later in the draft, they definitely hammered the outfielder. They basically spammed shortstop, pitcher, outfielder. That's pretty much what you have to do anyway.
Yep.
This feels like a best player available pick rather than a needs pick.
100%.
Fine by me.
Yeah. I mean,
it was definitely not an example of them reaching. It's them getting somebody who was still around at their pick when they probably would have went five picks earlier or should have.
Yeah, and I usually do a lot more, I guess, research on the draft, but just with, obviously, we haven't even been recording hardly at all. So for me, it's just like I didn't have time this year, so I don't really know much about this kid, but I'm looking forward to learning more about him to see kind of what he brings to the table. But sounds like he's got a decent hit tool. Some people said the strikeout rate's a little bit concerning, but I mean, he's 17. Like, what are you going
to
do?
I think that from what I recall, he projects out to be 55. And that's like,
that's good.
We're talking about a 17-year-old kid. Yeah. So like, Nobody really knows. There's like the only player I can think of my entire life who everybody had a good insight on as far as whether or not it was a slam dunk. It was probably Vladdy.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other player that young.
Bryce Harper was pretty young when he started. Like, I think he was like 16 and on the cover of Sports Illustrated or something, if I remember correctly.
Yep. And Bryce is probably, that was the one that was escaping me. Bryce is probably the other one. And Bryce, not to disrespect Vladdy, but Bryce is definitely
Bryce Harper's had a great career.
He's MVP. The best high school prospect I think I've seen in like 30 years.
Yeah, hands down, in my opinion. Yeah, I don't think anyone can argue that rationally. But yeah, that's the Blue Jays. It's a long draft, so Blue Jays drafted a bunch of players. I'm sure we'll chat a bit more about these guys as they get signed and filtered into the top prospect lists. We'll get to see kind of where projections have them landing. All-Star weekend, or All-Star week, I guess it wasn't during the weekend, but All-Star week, Patrick Parsh. Home run derby did you watch the home run derby at all, or is it too late for you?
It was too late. I was gassed all week.
No,
there's no
fair.
Way that I was going to be able to.
Yeah, it's tough. It's in Seattle, so it's on the West Coast. So they started things reasonably early, I would say. I think everything started at like 9 p.m. Eastern time, which is still 10 p.m. your time. But that's still only 7 p.m. on the West Coast. Or sorry, 6 p.m. on the West Coast. So
yeah,
there's Vladdy's, a lot of time. But I mean, Vladdy had a good home run derby again.
He's out there shattering all-star records. He was the youngest ever to be named MVP for a game 2 years ago. 2 years ago. So he was 22 years old doing that. And now he wins the home run derby. I don't know if he's the youngest ever to do it.
Don't
I think Soto won it. But anyway, He's now a member of the first father-son duo to win the Derby. Vladdy won it in 2007, when Vladdy Sr. was with the Angels. So,
and now Junior's won it, so that's pretty cool. He beat out Randy Arozarena, Tampa Bay Rays, who was pretty consistent throughout the entire Derby. Julio Rodriguez put up 41 home runs in the second round, or the first round, excuse me. But then ended up losing in the second round to Randy.
I love Randy. I know this is irrelevant, but I love Randy Arozarena.
He's a fun player to watch play, for sure.
I want him to play for like 20 more seasons. I know he's 20. I think he's 28 years old, so that's not going to happen. But
he plays with a lot of flair. I like guys like that.
His meteoric rise over the last three seasons has been pretty incredible, and this is the first year he became an all-star despite winning Rookie of the Year in 2021. But I did see that he hit, what was it, 43 home runs?
Something like that, yeah.
It's fucking ludicrous. That's crazy. Yeah,
there's a lot of dingers, but...
Is he the best left fielder right now, like in the AL?
Probably.
No. Well, what position? Aaron Judge's right fielder.
Aaron Judge's right and center, yeah. And then Mike Trout's center field.
Imagine all three of them in one outfield. Don't give the Yankees any ideas.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's definitely... I watched some of the Derby. I caught the end of it. I caught the semifinal when Vladdy won the semifinal, and then I caught the final round as well. And then watched the highlights. But yeah, it looked pretty good. I like the format now where it's timed instead of just 10 outs.
It's so much better now.
There's a lot more pressure.
So much better.
There's a lot more pressure on both the hitter and on the pitcher. I mean, Pete Alonso, the guy who was throwing to him, was just throwing him absolute dirt, like just garbage pitches.
Who was throwing?
I don't know. I don't remember the guy's name. I just saw some highlights, and yeah, he was.
Wasn't it Schneid's throwing to Vladdy?
Yeah, Schneid's was throwing muffins. The Blue Jays even tweeted out, "Manager John Schneider is getting absolutely like I can't remember what the tweet was, but they posted like a joke, like he's getting shelled right now or something was the tweet, I think, the Blue Jays tweeted out.
So he was funny. There. He was there. Schneider was there the whole weekend. Was he like a...
He wasn't involved in the All-Star game outside of pitching to Vladdy. So he went just for that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, but he's in full uni.
Yeah, full uni, of course.
Elite.
That's Schneider for you.
You got to love the Schneider. That man is a bear. Like, Jesus Christ, he's big.
Yeah, the Blue Jays tweeted out, "Manager John Schneider is getting absolutely shelled right now."
I mean, we're all laughing now, but this time last year, that was Jose Barrios. Barrios on the regular.
Yeah.
So,
but it's you know. Funny. But yeah, it was fun to watch. And the All-Star game itself was... kind of a pitcher's duel. The National League won for the first time in a decade, 3-2.
Did you almost shit your pants when Jordan Romano almost, I guess he didn't really get hurt, but
he left
still.
The game with back tightness, but says he's fine. So, I mean, I'm glad he got to get into the game this year, because last year he didn't. So that's good.
And it was like a fluke that he didn't get in either. Like it's never deliberate. They don't do that.
Yeah,
kind of
just the way things go, but yeah,
they should get rid of that rule, the three batter rule for the All-Star game, or do they adhere
I don't know.
To it?
I can't remember. I kind of like passively watched it. I was out for supper at the time, so I didn't really pay attention to it too much, but yeah, I saw the National League won.
Fun fact, somehow the American League had two blown saves in that game.
Yeah,
Bautista and Kirby both registered a blown save.
That's interesting.
I find that very funny. I don't know why. I can't explain it. Who won the MVP this year?
Elias Diaz, the kid from the Rockies who hit the winning home run. The go-ahead home run for the National League. He hit 2-run ball.
Oh, my God. Oh, wow. That's pretty crazy. His numbers aren't... They don't...
Every team needs
representative. He's 32.
Yep. Every team needs a representative, Patrick.
Oh, well, I guess... He stepped up to the plate and delivered.
He stepped up. Literally stepped up to the plate.
Yeah. I don't usually watch the All-Star game, nor do I have very much interest in it because yeah. It doesn't mean really mean anything. What is it? Home field advantage?
Means nothing anymore, actually.
Oh, it means nothing now?
Yep. They got rid
of that. They shouldn't even fucking do it.
It used
then.
To mean
just
home
it at
field
the end
advantage
of
the World Series, yes, but that hasn't been the case for a while.
They should do it then at the end of the year in November when no one cares and do it in Japan. That's how you grow the game.
Yeah, well, next season's going to open up in Seoul, South Korea. The Dodgers and Padres are going to play over there to start the year.
So, hell yeah.
Two-game series.
That's a big W for Korea and a big W for MLB.
Yeah, first ever MLB regular season games played in Korea. So that's pretty
Do you
cool.
think the KBO is mad about that? Or do you think they're
no,
like,
no? I think any attention baseball gets over there. Koreans love baseball, so I think they're probably
Oh my God, yes.
They deserve yes. some games over there. I'm really happy that that's going to be the case. Korea is baseball mad, and you love to see it, so...
Do you know what's also kind of cool is, like, some of the, like, team names in the KBO, it's almost like Japan, where it's, like, Bears, Eagles, Tigers,
yeah.
Giants, Lions, and then you've got Dinos, or Dinos, and then the Wiz. There's a KBO team called the Wiz, and then there's one called the Heroes. Those are good names. That sounds like video game names.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with that. No, I just wanted to talk about the. I just wanted to talk about the KBO for like 2 seconds. Cause
yeah.
We
that's
rarely.
My, yeah. The 2024 schedule came out today. No game times yet, but we know where the Blue Jays will be and when. Good series in Wrigley Field coming up this year. That's one of the places they'll go in National League ballparks, which is pretty cool. Love that. That's an enticing series for Blue Jay road trippers. But yeah, I mean, All-Star game, all the Blue Jays got to play. Vladdy got in there. Bichette, Merrifield got in there. Romano, of course, got in for one batter, but left the game with back tightness. Says he's fine, so hopefully that's the case. Just said it just felt tight when he was loosening up in the bullpen. He thought maybe it would get better in the game, but it didn't. So he decided to not pitch through it, which is a good thing. Smart on his part.
Yep, sure is. Especially for a game that means nothing.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'm glad he got to pitch. Good to see him there. But yeah, let's get into the Diamondbacks, Patrick. Second half, or the unofficial second half of the season, 10 games late, starts tomorrow. The Arizona Diamondbacks are coming to town. The D-backs are actually tied with the Dodgers right now for the lead in the National League West. They're having a great season, currently sitting at 52-39. And they've been kind of led by National League All-Star Game starter Zach Gallen, who's been absolutely impressive as a pitcher this season. And they have a rookie playing center field and leading the National League. I believe he's leading the National League in OPS, Corbin Carroll. He's been unbelievable. The kid has 18 homers and 26 stolen bases so far. He's hitting .289 with a .915 OPS. He's kind of the true definition of a 5-tool player. Runs, hits, fields, steals bases. You know, like he's got it all. He takes a fair amount of walks too.
Are you ready to see the best fastball in MLB right now?
Yeah, I am. I'm actually looking forward to this series. It's always fun to see these teams that
it's a measuring stick.
That we don't
the whole series is measuring.
Yeah, that we don't get to see very often. And I mean, these guys are, they've been leading or second in the division basically all season. And a big part of that is Zach Gallen.
Yep.
Huge part of that. He's going to start game two on Saturday. We don't know the Blue Jays starters yet. They still haven't announced them, which is fine because we know who our own people are. But
we can guess.
We can guess Kevin Gausman's probably going to be game one. He, of course, did not go to the All-Star game because he wanted to rest, which I respect.
Yep.
But yeah, Ryan Nelson's going to pitch game one for the D-backs, Patrick. He's so far this season...
Not a great year. Not but a not a terrible year either. Like, not like...
Yeah.
Trade
and the
him
only reason
he's
starting this game is because they wanted to give Zach Gallen a couple of extra day after starting pitching one inning in the All-Star game, which I get. So Ryan Nelson will start for the Diamondbacks. He's a fastball cutter, changeup, slider, and curveball pitcher. He's got five pitches.
Yeah, he mixes between fastball and then kind of a mix of
cutter,
a checks,
change,
a,
slider.
A checks mix of the cutter, the change, the slider, and the curveball. If we're being honest, none of them have really been effective this year at all. The one that I think is probably going to be the first to get dumped is this curveball, because it's just getting absolutely jackhammered this year. Opponents are hitting 545 against his curveball.
that's wild.
So don't throw it.
Pretty much.
Probably, I would argue his best pitch is probably his changeup, but that's not a surprise because the changeup right now is the...
Changeup's elite.
The changeup is the new curveball, which was the new cutter, which was the new da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Which was a new slider, and then da-da-da-da. Anyway, so the curveball is not good. You're probably not going to see it, and if you do see it, it's going to get tagged. You'll see, with Ryan Nelson, you're going to see the fastball most of the time.
Guys are hitting 304 off the fastball this year, too.
Like, yeah, I know. The only good pitch he has is the changeup. The rest of them are all getting tagged. The cutter is not good. It's a bad cutter. It's one that's high. Even though it's high and outside, it's getting tagged.
I would argue that that's not where you want to throw a cutter.
It's not.
It's too far over the plate.
It's a bad cutter.
Yeah.
Most of them are. There's very few pitchers who can pitch a good cutter in 2023. And no offense to Ryan Nelson, he's definitely not one of the stats
not,
don't lie.
This
it's,
is
it's not
Mariano Rivera's cutter, that's for sure.
No, it is not. But that being said, one thing I notice with the Jays is when they face a pitcher like this who struggles with almost all their secondary pitches, they target the fastball, so... And for whatever reason, the Jays always seem to struggle with this. So it's an interesting matchup in that, even though all of his numbers indicate like he's just not having a good season and all of his pitches, except for the changeup, are ineffective this year. He's also the kind of guy, like we talked about this last time with the Tigers, there's not a lot here to be impressed about, but they put a no-hitter on us. So could be that we could see the Jays knock this guy out with like two outs, or he could go seven innings. It's 0 or 100. There's no in between with the Jays. So
that's very fair. Yeah.
But that being said, the matchup is to the advantage of the Jays against Ryan Nelson. Zach Gallen, on the other hand, I don't know how to put this nicely, but he also doesn't have a good cutter, but he has an elite fastball, probably the best in the game right now, and a very, very strong changeup. So that's scary. I check under my bed at night for Zach Gallen.
Yeah, he's gonna be a tough battle. I mean, this guy, probably the favorite for the National League Cy Young at this point in the season, which is why he started the All-Star game.
Yeah,
he's doesn't walk people at all, which is
bad for
us. Just mentioned, it's scary because the Blue Jays are a team that likes to chase a little bit.
They're aggressive,
and he's got
a
good chase rate, good whiff rate. He does give up some hard contact, but he doesn't get hit often.
I feel like he's gonna stomp us.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have crazy velo either. Like, the fastball is only 94. On the average, right? Like, he's not throwing like just straight heat. He has good location. And
his location and movement are sublime.
Yeah, you look at that changeup heat map, and then if you go back to Ryan Nelson, it's just Gallen's is just a solid red dot, and Nelson's is a bit all over the place. But this cutter is a bit better. I mean, he's got it lower down, and also a bit more inside to lefties. And the curveball is just like, it's perfection. Low and down. And yeah, that fastball, he just fills the entire zone up. So, you know, you can throw it anywhere he wants, which is always nice as for a starting pitcher to be able to command that heater. So it's going to be tough. I mean, it's going to be curious to see how the Blue Jays line up their rotation, because I would love to see a Gausman versus Gallen game just for shits and giggles. But I don't know if the Blue Jays will do that. But we'll see. So the thing is Corbin Carroll Patrick, who we already mentioned a little bit, he has the best OPS against right-handed pitching in baseball this year because he's just a power lefty bat. And I don't know if do the Blue Jays throw Kikuchi at some point in this series just to try to give the D-backs a different look from the left side? I don't know.
Tommy Henry versus Kikuchi would be kind of a cool matchup. Sunday,
a couple lefties. Yeah.
But I'll say a couple things about Tommy Henry. He does two things really, really well. He limits hard contact very well, and he gets guys to chase a lot. He's got, what a surprise, he's got a great curveball, good slider. It's kind of a departure from his other rotation pals, but his fastball is his weakest pitch. It gets tagged pretty bad, and that's his main pitch. Not the same consistency as Zach Gallen. I mean, that's not a surprise, but the big thing with him, I think, is going to be force him to throw a lot of pitches. He does walk a lot more guys than the average cat, but he's good at getting like dopey bad contact from hitters. So if you want to beat him, make him throw a ton of pitches, which I feel like is going to be a thing for Bo to do in this game. I don't know if Bo hits particularly well against lefties, but
Bo hits particularly well against everybody.
That's true. The big thing with him, I think, is just going to be to run up the pitch count as early as possible. Get him tired, force him to throw more fastballs. And since his fastball is weak, I would sit on that because, he's got a good slider.
Yep.
But I think he's also gotten lucky because most of it is middle, and that's dangerous. If you're sitting on fastball, you're going to launch that into the next
and
century.
I mean, even though he gets chased, he doesn't get a lot of strikeout or a lot of whiff, right? So he's just getting guys to put outside pitches in play, and that's how he limits hard contact, right? It's that high chase rate.
That's what you do, though, with the curveball and the changeup. You put it on the corner, right?
Yeah, and guys have a hard time. Like, you're going to see a lot of ground ball from him because of that. And I mean, he's only got 37% ground ball, but you look at the weak and like topped contact, very high, and a lot of guys get under his pitches too. There's not a lot of barrels against this guy, not a lot of solid contact because of the fact that he's got a pretty deceptive delivery. So, it'll be fun to watch these guys. It's always cool to see these teams, right? Because these players, we see them on the highlights, but you don't get to see them work for 9 innings. Carroll's going to be a guy to watch out for. He's led off. He hits third. He sometimes cleans up for this team. And they've got a couple guys with speed. Like, Carroll's got 26 stolen bases. They've also got Jake McCarthy, who plays kind of on and off right field for them. And he's got 20 stolen bases in only 60 games so far this season. So they got some guys who can light it up on the base pass. Evan Longoria is their third baseman now, Patrick. He's having a good year OPS-wise, not so much on the batting average anymore, but he still has a bit of power left in him. Ketel Marte at second base is the guy who the Jays kind of were trying to trade for last year. They ended up going with Varsho. And then, of course, we'll see the return of Lourdes Gurriel and Gabriel Moreno to the Rogers Center. Gurriel was just on the All-Star team. 809 OPS so far this year. He's found his power again. He's got 15 home runs. Batting average has taken a bit of a dip down to 263, but that's at the expense of some power.
The defense has improved, though. It's still not good, but
yeah,
it's...
he's not playing every day in the outfield. He's kind of playing some DH a little bit for them, too. And kind of cycling in and out. But yeah, they definitely have, like, I would say, like, 6 or 7 guys who have pretty good offensive numbers. So
I'm curious to see how the back half of the season goes for Gurriel. I mean, he's getting close to the end of that contract.
He's so streaky, yeah.
Yeah, he's streaky. I feel like he is... he's definitely traded average for power this year. You can see it in his numbers. I'm happy for him because he deserves the opportunity, and I feel like his defense was
This is the last year of that contract that you mentioned, by the way. He's a free agent at the end of this year.
kind of curious, isn't it? Wouldn't that be kind of funny if he became a free agent and the Jays looked at him as being another guy to pursue? I don't know that they wouldn't, but it really depends, I guess, on how the rest of the year goes. If he continues on this trajectory, he's going to...
He might get himself a five-year deal if he's 29 years old, so he still has plenty left in the tank. So,
would you sign him back?
Depends on what the Jays decide to do with Kevin Kiermaier, because obviously he's only on the one-year deal. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Springer for a couple more years. You've got Varsho for a couple more years under team control. But Merrifield's got that mutual option that the Jays are not going to accept because it's just too much money. And then Kiermaier's on the one-year deal. So it really depends on what happens with those two guys as well. Obviously, they still have Kevin Biggio, who's capable of playing a bit of outfield. But I don't know. I think they traded Gurriel for a reason, because they wanted to prioritize outfield defense.
Yeah, you're right. And yeah, at the same time, though, I don't see him as being an answer to the outfield woes that we're going to have. I think the main thing for the Jays is, did they re-sign Whit Merrifield? If the answer is yes, then there's 0% chance that Gurriel comes back, or they would even entertain it, if he even was interested.
Yeah.
But I think I don't see Whit going anywhere. I don't think that he will, they'll pick up the mutual, but I also don't think at 34 going on 35, he's gonna, I don't know. He'd be betting a lot on himself if he didn't take the safe path of staying in Toronto, because they will want to sign him. Like I don't see them dumping him. They're not going to pick up that ludicrous option, but that's the point. I could see him coming back. I'm not worried about George's defense, because he'll just hang out and write for the rest of his career. And I like Kevin Kiermaier. I don't see him as being an answer. He's cooled off a lot the last, 30 games. I don't know, man. But that defense is really good. This is tough.
Yeah,
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know. We kind of just got onto this subject, but
can we talk about this guy? This is the first player, probably since Juan Soto, that has me thinking like a 22-year-old could win an MVP award. Corbin Carroll.
Yeah, he's...
Holy shit.
This kid's elite. Like,
oh my God.
He tore his right... I think it was his right labrum a couple years ago in his shoulder, and missed an entire season.
And he's 22.
He's 22.
So he missed a whole season. He came back. He's 22. He's 5'10", 165. That's basically me in high school.
Yeah, and he mashes. Like, he's got pop. And he's got speed. God. Like, I drafted this kid in Dynasty Baseball, 4 years ago or whatever it was that he was draft eligible, and so I've been able to watch him kind of move up the minor leagues, and he accelerated quickly. Like, this kid, I don't know what to say about him. Like, he's got it all. Like, the guy, it was 2019 when he kind of made his minor league debut. He only played in 42 games. And only had 2 home runs before he got hurt. He was playing with Hillsborough in the Northwest League, same league as the Vancouver Canadiens. And then last year he got into only 7 games in a high A ball. This year or 2022 he played in three levels, Patrick. He started in rookie ball rehabbing for a couple games, then he went up to double A for 58 games. Then the AAA for 33 games, and he over the course of 3 teams last year, he hit 24 homers. So he really kind of found that power stroke, and it was enough that Diamondbacks actually called him up last year, and he had an .830 OPS and 104 at bats for them last year
sick.
He didn't meet the rookie. I think rookie eligibility ends after 120 at bats or something like that. So he still is able to carry that over into this year, and he's got 18 home runs in 300 at bats. So over the course of a season, if he gets 600 at bats, he's gonna hit close to 40 homers.
And yeah, I know, and he's 22 years old, and He's 5'10", 165, doing
this. Yeah, he's still got some room to fill out a little bit, you know?
Here's what you can't do with Corbin Carroll. You can't throw him a fastball, and you can't throw him a sinker. if you're not throwing off-speed stuff to him,
yeah,
you're fucked. The only pitch I'd be interested to see how he does against is going to be the splitter.
Yeah.
Kevin Gausman. I think that's a big matchup in that first game.
Yeah, 980 OPS against righties, Patrick. 16 of his 18 home runs are against right-handed pitching.
What's his OPS against lefties?
718. Still pretty good, but not as good.
Here it is, my bold prediction for the whole thing. And his sprint speed's 99. Jesus.
Yeah, he's just elite.
Here's a bold prediction. You say Kikuchi will pitch in the third game of this series.
I could see it, you know. And the
lefty
reason,
versus lefty.
The reason being, too, is I think I could see it being Gausman, Berríos, Kikuchi. And the reason being is that Bassett and Berríos have both traditionally struggled against lefties, but Bassett more so this season. And the reason that I think you could see Kikuchi in the third game too, because I think you want to split up Gausman and Bassett a bit. They're kind of the two guys that can eat a lot of innings for you.
Yep.
And putting Bassett between Kikuchi and then Alek Manoah would give you at least a reasonable shot of resting your bullpen between those two guys' starts, you know, between Kikuchi and Manoah's starts. So I think that's kind of like the bullpen management rotation order. I think your best bet is still Gausman, Berríos, or Bassett behind him. Those three guys are your best three guys right now, with Kikuchi and Manoah to follow in whatever order you choose. But yeah, like you said, do not throw Corbin Carroll a fastball. And I think for me, if you look at his spray chart, he's got like just as many home runs to left field as he does to right field. Like this kid, he goes oppo. He doesn't care. Like he...
Yep. Challenge him with sliders out of the zone. See if you can get him to chase. If he doesn't chase, well then fine, you put him on.
Yeah.
Seems
like change-ups. Change-ups and cutters are the ways to get him out.
Slider too. I would be interested, and I'm interested to see what Berríos does against him, and I'm interested to see what Kikuchi can do against him.
Yeah, Berríos will be a heavy diet of slurves and sinkers.
I just feel, well, he's not going to throw a sinker to Corbin Carroll.
Not in a bad spot, hopefully.
I think the key to him is to just get him to try to get him to bite on sliders that are tailing out of the zone, but I guess that's everybody. We'll see. He's really, his plate vision is going to be challenged in this series for sure, because he's going to be facing, well, Gausman is aggressive, but if it's Bassett, yeah, it's kitchen sink approach where he throws everything.
Kitchen sink
with,
for sure.
With Berríos, the slurve is incredibly good this year.
Yeah, and his changeup is back too, which is important. Good. For Berríos. And he's been throwing it more so lately against righties more than he had. He still throws it lots against lefties, of course, but he's actually started using it against righties too, which I think is very important.
Yeah, I'm not worried about either one of those two, of Gausman or Berríos. Bassett, I'm a little middle of the road about. That's why I kind of like the idea of screwing with their lineup by throwing in Kikuchi. So you have the... Tommy Henry is a lefty as well, so you get both teams being annoyed and having to work counts against lefties. So Sunday could be a fun game if that's the matchup. I'm going to call it now. That's going to be the matchup.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I'm sure the Blue Jays will immediately publish their pitchers as soon as we're done recording this. And
yeah, of course.
Be wrong, but... That
it happens all the time.
That's kind of how it goes for us, it seems. What was it last time that I said something? I can't remember what it was, but it was immediately proven wrong like 20 minutes later. I don't even want to think about it because I don't like being wrong. But predictions for the series, Patrick. What do you think is going to happen here?
It's going to be... It won't be a sweep either way. It's going to be... This is a tough one. I think if they start, it depends on how game three goes. Cause I think the first game, Gausman versus Ryan Nelson is, well then again, Gossman's not getting run support. This is tough. You know what? I would start Chris Bass. This is weird. I would start Chris Bass at game one or Jose Berríos game one and then save Kevin Gausman for game two against Zach Gallen.
I too want to see Gallen versus Gausman. I would love to
that would be fun, and it also gives back some of the lost, pitcher ability into the second game, because, like, obviously if you're putting your best foot forward against Ryan Nelson and his ERA over five, you're kind of burying the lead a little bit. I think I would go Berríos versus Nelson. I'm changing it now. Berríos versus Nelson, Gausman versus Gallen, and then Henry versus Kikuchi. And if they do that, I think those starter matchups are in a way that make a series win much more possible. Just my two cents.
That's fair. Yeah, I'm with it. I can see
it. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's felt weird to have no baseball for like 4 days in a row. But it'll be back tomorrow evening. Game times for this series on Friday night, which is the 14th of July. The Blue Jays and Diamondbacks will face off at 7:07 Eastern Time, your normal weeknight starting time. On Saturday, the game is at 3:07. And then on Sunday, we get some nice afternoon baseball. And that game is at 1:37 Eastern Time. So I get morning baseball on Sunday, which is always fun.
Morning baseball. That was never a thing, I think, for us.
Well, for me, the game starts at 11:37 on Sunday. I will unfortunately be umpiring most of the weekend, so I might not get to watch more than a few innings. We got a big 18U AAA tournament here this weekend, so I'll be calling balls and strikes. And
ladies and gentlemen, get ready for the Justin Anderson ump show.
Welcome to the ump show.
Are you going to be doing some flashy strikeouts?
No, I don't do that.
Do you do anything, or do you just go strike three?
I have a strike three call, but I wouldn't call it flashy by any means. Okay.
You don't, like, run around in circles for 20 minutes.
No, I do like jumping jacks, though. No, I'm just kidding.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, I don't do anything exciting. I actually stole my strike three call from an umpire that was umpiring in Lloydminster when I was growing up. When I first started umpiring, I stole his strike three call. And I've never stopped using it, but yeah, no, yeah. I'll be on the diamond. I've got 6 games this weekend, so it'll be a busy weekend for that. No rest for the wicked.
I've got a busy weekend catching up on my sleep. That is it. There's no Formula One race. There's nothing.
That's true. I'm going to see Thomas Cruise in Mission Impossible 7 tonight. Dead Reckoning.
Did you see Oppenheimer already?
I have not. No, but I will be checking that out at some point too. I have heard they're both really good, so
I love when
summer blockbusters come out at the same time. I love it.
I hate it because then you have to choose.
Ugh, why not both?
There's a bunch because I'm not really a fan of. Actually, I've never seen a single Mission Impossible movie.
They're so good.
And I'm not really that interested. I am interested in Oppenheimer. I'm interested in Barbie. Because I like Greta Gerwig. She's a very good director.
I think that movie's wacky. I'm here for it.
That's what I'm hoping for. And then I was interested in Indiana Jones, but I think I'm just going to wait for that to be on Disney Plus because it appears to be bombing. And I think it'll be back. It'll be on D Plus soon. And also, I just like the original trilogy for Indy. Everything else after that, I could just pretend doesn't exist.
I'm with you there. I will see it. But yeah, I'm not sure if I'll see it in theaters or not.
No.
Just with my schedule. I still haven't watched Guardians of the Galaxy 3 yet or the Super Mario Bros. Movie.
Is Guardians of the Galaxy 3 coming to Disney Plus?
It will, but not yet. It's still in theaters. Its runtime has been long in theaters. But I would imagine within the next month it'll be on there. I think they have a digital date of September 1st for DVD.
Nope. It's able to buy or rent digitally July 7th.
Oh, July 7th. Oh.
It's D+. People are projecting August.
Okay. So
soon. I can wait another month.
I can wait that long, too. Yeah, that one's not one I need to see on the big screen.
Oppenheimer is the one you have to see in theaters.
Yeah, and
it's shot with an IMAX.
Mission Impossible is the same way, shot in IMAX. just like Top Gun Maverick was, which was awesome.
I watched that. I watched Top Gun Maverick. I was very skeptical going into it. It delivered.
It was,
and that's all I'm ever going to say about it.
It may have been the best sequel to an 80s movie like that's been made recently, because they've been doing all these like
remakes and reboots and everything. Else.
But it was almost better than the first one in terms of like, cinematography, probably better, but obviously the Top Gun is a classic. So
Top Gun's, the first Top Gun has a way better story.
True.
But I think it's weird because it's like, here it is 30 years, something years later. The acting is better.
Yeah.
In Top Gun Maverick, the cinematography is way better. Even Tom Cruise, who I'm not even that big a fan of, his chops are definitely on display in this one.
Yeah.
See, I don't want to give too much credit to the director because I'm a big fan of Tony Scott, who directed the original.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P. Tony.
I think they took a lot of inspiration, though, which you have to.
When you're I believe the film is dedicated to Tony, isn't it?
I believe it was, yeah.
I don't 100% remember. There's been so many movies. Basically, every movie that Ridley Scott has done since his brother passed away is dedicated to him. But this one in particular, I could see it made a shitload of money, too, for that budget. Holy shit.
Yeah, they killed it.
Yeah, it was the second highest grossing film of 2022, just behind that Avatar movie, which I also did not see.
I still haven't seen it yet. Yeah,
I'm not interested.
Me either.
If I'm being honest, it looks like a whatever. Anyway, Top Gun Maverick delivered. I liked it a lot. I liked what they did with the characters. I'm sad that Meg Ryan wasn't back, though. I understand why they did it the way that they did. They killed off her, the mother, Carol, off screen. I like the connections that they did with, like, Penny Benjamin was in this movie, which is referenced at the start of Top Gun. And then some of the new boys were kind of cool. The new pilots.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. And they also had a homoerotic
football scene. Yeah.
Football scene. Yeah. Which is fine. I know that Top Gun was not a gay coded movie, but it is. But yeah, Val Kilmer, knock it out of the park. I love that. I love those scenes. I loved it.
Where they were able to use the...
with Iceman.
AI to recreate his voice since he can't...
Love Val Kilmer.
Anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you got to see, like... what's his... there was a bunch of very young, talented actors in this
Miles
movie.
Yeah, Miles Teller was in it.
Bill Pullman's son was in it.
Yep.
Lewis Pullman is Bob. There's just a lot of really... really good quality acting in this movie. Definitely worth watching.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that as someone who wasn't really that big a fan. I'm not at all a fan of Tom Cruise, but I am a big fan of Jennifer Connelly and a big fan of the story from the first one.
Yeah. That is fair.
Yeehaw.
We've had a few random tangents in this episode, but that's just kind of... After 250 episodes, if you don't know that we do that, then you're probably new.
If you don't know, now you know.
Yeah, but that's probably it for us. We'll probably be back Sunday. I'd imagine we'll do one.
Yep.
Once my baseball games have wrapped up and the Blue Jays will be done with their series against the D-backs. And we'll be back Sunday evening at some point to give you guys a recap of how the first series of the unofficial second half goes. And then we'll see kind of what happens after that. The Blue Jays have a tough schedule, Patrick. After the D-backs, they'll get the Padres coming next week for more interleague play before heading on the road to the West Coast to play the Mariners and the Dodgers in LA. So that'll be fun. But
I'm not worried about the Mariners, the Dodgers. I check under my bed at night for Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, he's still so good, but. That'll be it for us though, Patrick. And I mean, after 250 episodes, we're still going. 5 years. That's a lot of episodes we've sat behind the microphone for, and we appreciate everybody who's listened to us and come on the show over the time, all the guests we've had. The interviews have always been fun. We'll maybe try and do some more of those in the future, but we've kind of just been enjoying doing our own thing lately.
So much. I definitely, like, I love all the interviews we've done. I like it when it's just the two of us, because it's hard to loop a third person into our shenanigans.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
Yeah, especially since we don't see each other visually when we're recording. We're just recording audio. So we've kind of built up a pretty good system at this point. And it is tough to bring a third variable into that equation. But you can always find us on our website at bfmdpodcast.com. We are still on Twitter for some reason, bfmdpodcast. Not tweeting as much, but still lurking just as much.
We're working on what we're going to do.
We're not really working on that at all. We haven't thought that far. Don't lie.
You're not supposed to say that.
I'm a man of the people.
whatever.
But yeah, Twitter is what it is. It's a rat hole. Everyone, it's always been a rat hole, just even more so lately, but we won't get into that. Elon Musk is a piece of shit. Fuck that guy.
We're not going to get into that. Also...
Also, he's a piece of shit. So
incendiary words for the Musk man.
It's true though, but
yeah.
Anybody who denies it is a loser. But
yeah, we're definitely alienating a small portion of our audience by saying that. Yeah. But also,
if you're here for the hot Elon takes, this is not the place for you.
I know. I was just gonna say, if you're here looking for an Elon Musk defender, you've made a wrong turn.
You're
somewhere.
In the wrong neighborhood, sweetie. But
yeah.
Enjoy that. But the Blue Jays will be playing the Baltimore Orioles, Patrick, at the playoffs start today in the wild card round. And the winner of that series would play the Tampa Bay Rays. So
I don't like either of those things.
No. So let's hope the Blue Jays can make some magic happen here in the second half. But that'll be it for us today. We'll be back in a few days for Patrick out in Halifax. I am Justin here in Saskatoon, and we will see you next time.